This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
Good afternoon. Thanks for your company on the Country Hour. It's a pleasure to have you on board until 1 o'clock. Plenty to talk about around Queensland. We will get stuck in to the weather situation with the Bureau just after 12:30. And I will give you the latest warnings very soon as well. Also on the program, hear from some of the producers affected by the situation in the north and northwest. Starting though with the current weather situation, because there are several warnings in place still in the northwest and for northern Queensland as well. There's a Watch and Act warning currently continuing for the Richmond Shire. Residents should monitor conditions there as flooding continues along the Flinders River and in low-lying areas. Watch and Act warnings are also still current in the Winton region. Those residents need to prepare now with further flooding expected over coming days. If you're not in Winton, you should avoid that area. The community is isolated and not accessible by road. A Watch and Act warning is current for the Flinders Shire. Now, residents in that region should continue to monitor conditions as well. Continued flooding is along the Flinders River, Galar Creek and other surrounding low-lying areas. And there are multiple flood warnings current across the north and northwest. That includes major flood warnings for the Western River, where the river at Winton is falling with moderate flooding, but renewed rises to the major level are still possible. Major flooding's continuing in the Flinders River at Richmond and Walker's Bend. The latest reading at Walker's Bend this morning was 16.2 metres and steady. As upstream floodwaters arrive, though, that river may reach just below the 2019 river level. Now, river levels will continue to remain elevated for a number of days. There's also moderate flood warnings for the Norman and Georgina rivers, as well as minor and general flood warnings covering the Diamantina, Nicholson, Leichhardt, Thompson and Gilbert rivers, as well as Eyre Creek. Now, flooding has eased in the Cloncurry River, and there is moderate flood warnings current for the Herbert River and minor flood warnings covering the Tully, Upper Burdekin and Cape Rivers. And a broad flood watch continues for northeast Queensland's coast. We are expecting heavy rain to develop between Cairns and Proserpine later in the week. And you'll get the full detail on that with the Weather Bureau just after 12:30. Now, of course, with all that water around, there's quite a lot of road closures to be across as well. Really, if you don't need to be on the roads, now's not a great time to be travelling in the north. There are several significant closures due to that flooding, and that includes the Flinders Highway between Richmond and Julia Creek and Cloncurry to Julia Creek. The highway between Hughenden to Richmond and to Pentland is open with caution. The Landsborough Highway is closed from Cloncurry to Winton and Winton to Longreach, and the Donoghue Highway is closed from Boulia to the Northern Territory border. Now, the full list of road closures and more localised information is available on your local council's disaster dashboard. You can also head along to the Queensland Traffic website, which is QLD Traffic, or you can call them on 13 19 40. Now, I will give you a close look at the situation very soon. In the meantime, you can always get the latest weather details on the Bureau's website. You can head to the Queensland Disaster website, which is disaster.qld.gov.au. Your local council does have a disaster dashboard as well. It's a handy link to bookmark for the latest local warnings and updates. And of course, keep listening to ABC Radio, your emergency broadcaster.
Storms can be damaging and unpredictable. Being prepared will help reduce the impact on you. Put together an emergency kit. Include first aid supplies, a torch, battery-powered radio, extra drinking water and long-life food in case the power's cut. Write an emergency plan, including contact numbers for family and neighbours, and have copies of important documents in waterproof bags. For storm updates, visit the ABC Emergency website.
It's 12:09. Now, we're starting to get an early picture of the livestock losses across the northwest as more and more producers are able to get out and about and assess the situation on their property. Now, as of 4:00 yesterday afternoon, producers reported around about 19,280 head of livestock missing or deceased. Now, total fencing damage is estimated to be about 919 kilometres, while more than 1,584 kilometres of private roads have been impacted by the weather. The department of Primary Industries is encouraging affected producers to complete the disaster impact survey to report their damage and losses on their property. Now, that information will help speed up the process to activate disaster relief. And while it isn't expected to hopefully hit the significant stock losses of the 2019 floods, there could still be quite significant impact from the losses in North Queensland. It comes at a time when producers and processors are needing to navigate a new export hurdle into China. Simon Quilty is a meat and livestock analyst and consultant from Global AgriTrends. He spoke with Barbara Miller about how the losses could impact the national herd.
Barbara, they are in the vicinity of 19 to 20,000 head so far as we can gather. It's very localised and very different to that January 2019 flood, which was far more widespread. And the losses, as you said, were greater than 450,000. The one area that's particularly badly hit at the moment is Flinders River. And at the moment at Normanton, it's 16 metres high, just below the 2019 record level of 17.1. The real impact here, Barbara, is after the floods recede, the floodwaters, because the concern with hypothermia is that a lot of these animals, this is a breeding area, so calves and cows, could die due to hypothermia and could take the losses, I believe, to potentially greater than 50,000.
And what about the rain? Is that in any way good? Is there any upside?
Yes, there is, Barbara. So here we have a situation where Queensland for the last 2.5 years has been in a holding pattern in terms of whether rebuilding or liquidating, whereas Southern Australia we've seen a very heavy liquidation occur. This rainfall, given how widespread across northern and central Queensland, I think could be the trigger to seeing a rebuild commence in northern Australia, driven by both good rains, good pastures, and good prices that have come from the south.
And as we said there, Simon, this comes as China has announced new tariffs once Australia exceeds a quota for its beef exports. How big a hurdle is this going to be for the industry?
There is no doubt this is a challenge. And we've now been set a safeguard, which is the level at which we get to in terms of beef exports at 205,000 metric tonnes. Where it gets challenging for us, Barbara, is that in the past we have had safeguards before, but the tariff, once you reach that level, was 12%. Today, that's 55%, and it's cost prohibitive, and we'll see the flow of beef stop into China as a result.
What does it mean, though, that they, you know, once this tariff kicks in, once a certain level of export has been reached, does that, you know, how does that affect the industry over the course of a year?
Well, what happens is that we have many programs in place for high quality beef, whether it's chilled or frozen, and that requires sending consistently product every month to meet the requirements of customers and consumers across China. So when you suddenly introduce this, and it's likely to be filled by probably late April, early May, because of the rush to the door effect, because everyone will try to get in before the trigger is, before the safeguard is triggered, therefore, that beef flow stops because you suddenly hit 55% very early in the year, and the market will be devoid of meat for the balance of the year.
Are you getting a sense that producers are already looking to alternative markets after this announcement from Beijing?
Possibly, but the problem is, Barbara, that every other supply country into China has been subjected with the same safeguard and the same very high preventative tariffs. In some instances, it's as high as 67%. So the problem is that everyone rushes from all these other countries to fill their safeguard or quota access into China. We all fill it in April, May, and we all look for alternate markets at the same time. I estimate, based on 2025 figures, that this could be as high as 550,000 metric tons at the same time trying to seek other markets globally. That leads to downward pressure on pricing. So, Barbara, we think there's a way forward here, though, a better solution for Australia to try and avoid this problem.
Simon Quilty is a meat and livestock analyst from Global AgriTrends, speaking there with Barbara Miller. And we'll have more on the China tariff situation on the program after 12:30. Of course, China was once the main customer for our beef. America has overtaken them in volume in the last couple of years. We'll take a look at that situation after 12:30. In the meantime, how are things for you today? You can send me a message on 0487 993 222. I'd love to hear from you if you're listening anywhere in the state or the country, I guess. 0487 993 222. Now, later in the show, we will also have a look at how some of the wet conditions developing in North Queensland are already having an impact. But up next, you'll hear from some of the producers who are assessing the damage in the Northwest.
ABC Breakfast. There's never been a better way to start your day. We're local like you, and we'll be right here every weekday when the sun rises. Join us for breakfast weekday mornings on ABC Local Radio.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
And don't forget, you can get the latest rural news in your rural report, part of your local breakfast program from 6:15. Now, floodwaters have begun to recede in some areas of the northwest after falls exceeded yearly rainfall totals in a pretty short period of time. Alan Ogg is from Ayrshire Downs along the Wokingham Creek northwest of Winton, and he spoke with Crispian Yeomans about the flooding at his place.
Pretty general sort of flooding everywhere. All the major creek systems are all sort of out of their banks and sort of moving around, but starting to see sort of the beginning of it starting to go down a little bit in some areas, so yeah.
How do you describe the extent of the flooding this year?
In our area, probably a little bit sort of hit and miss, like some bigger rainfalls, and then even like neighbouring properties being 100 mil behind, so a little bit hit and miss, but we're sort of on the edge of it here in Winton compared to like Kynona, Cloncurry, and sort of back to the north and the west there, so it's probably been a bit of a blessing for most people, but we'll probably still see some losses and a fair bit of infrastructure damage.
Do you know how your cattle and sheep are faring at the moment?
Able to see some of our cattle, probably still too wet to sort of go and try and annoy our sheep too much, but yeah, they're pretty cut up after the rain event, but we've had some good feed sort of going into this one, so they're not starving by any means, so they were pretty strong going in, and hopefully we haven't had too many losses, but we had close to 200 mil in a sort of 10-hour period there, so that'll test a few of them out, but yeah, hopefully not too bad. It was a pretty heavy downpour there just on New Year's, but it's always good to see the rain, but yeah, hopefully we don't see too many more days like that.
We're hearing stories of sheep and cattle having to swim through large sections of floodwater. Is that something we're seeing at Ayrshire Downs?
Yeah, cattle will swim through a little bit. Sheep definitely won't. They'll in desperate, they'll have a crack, but if they're full wool or anything, there's not too much float in them. There's a fair bit of sink, so the sheep, it'll worry the sheep a bit, but most people try to the best they can to get them out of those areas where it does flood badly, but yeah, there's only so much you can do.
You also had to do a bit of a rescue mission, but not for sheep or cattle. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, just a few people in the district trying to get home and people travelling through who got caught out a bit by the floodwaters, so just helping a few people understand and also just, help them out. Got a bit of a caravan park there, so a few people have been staying, and just until the waters recede a little bit more and they can get to where they need to go.
Where were they travelling from?
A lot of them were coming from Mount Isa way, Cloncurry, and trying to get through to Longreach and Brisbane, but yeah.
And how they're going?
Most of them got a bit of food and water, so they were pretty good, but a few more days and I think it'll be testing them out a little bit. So, yeah, we'll keep a bit of an eye on them, make sure they got a bit of food and water, and hopefully in the next couple of days they can get into a town or head back towards Cloncurry just to get a few more supplies.
Do you know what's next for you as you think about the floodwaters receding? And
Probably just our main thing is just to check on our stock like most people and just assess any damage that needs doing, fencing and infrastructure. But probably our biggest concern is just to get out there and have a look around and just see what damages are there in those sort of areas.
Alan Ogg from Ayrshire Downs, keeping the fodder up for all sorts northwest of Winton. He was speaking with Crispian Yeomans. And while the rain may have stopped for most of the northwest for now, as the sun starts to make its appearance, producers are hitting the ground and taking to the air to assess the situation on their property. For Patrick Hick at Argyle Station at Julia Creek, it's a job he didn't think he'd be doing again so soon after the 2019 floods.
Oh, it's pretty grim, Maddie. Cattle are not travelling well in a lot of areas. It is changeable, just depends on the area, the property and the situation. But a lot of cattle are not travelling well at all. I'm seeing a fair bit of what I take to be pneumonia in cattle that is taking a lot of cattle down now.
And, you know, we've had a little bit of reprieve. There was some sun out yesterday. Do those kind of conditions help when I guess the cattle are still standing in water?
Oh, look, it definitely helps. It's got to start to dry out at some point. We've got to start somewhere, but, you know, we're a fair ways yet from cattle being able to move around and feed on firm ground.
And the state government has released sort of the early estimates of total stock losses across the area that's been affected by this flooding event, and it's at the moment over 19,000 head. I mean, from what you were seeing yesterday, do you have any kind of estimate of what you're looking at Argyle?
No, it's a moving target, so no, I would not.
Mm. And I guess because of the easing in conditions and some blue skies yesterday, a lot more people were able to get out and assess things. Have you heard much from people around you about whether, you know, what you're seeing on your place is pretty similar to what people around you are seeing?
Oh, look, it's changeable. Some properties have travelled reasonably well and others have been hit very hard. So, look, it is quite changeable, but, yes, there's some tough stories out there.
Patrick Hick from Argyle Station near Julia Creek speaking with Madeline McCosker. It's 22 past 12. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour, and I've got a message through on 0487 993222. Make sure you pop your name on there so I can say g'day if you're sending me through a message. But this one says, we keep hearing about the numbers, how ridiculous for the government departments to release stock losses when this event is still evolving. There's literally cattle washing away or dying every hour. And on another note, those hardest hit are out in the paddocks doing their utmost to save cattle. Filling in a survey is the last thing on their mind, and if they do, it'll be a stab in the dark. I think reflecting some of that changeable situation that Patrick Hick was talking about there. You are listening to the Country Hour. It is 23 past 12 now. We will up next take a look at the focus shifting to the North Queensland coast, and after that we'll get the latest from the Weather Bureau.
An emergency can happen anywhere. There are three warning levels across Australia: advice, watch and act, and emergency. To learn more, go to the ABC Emergency website and stay listening to your emergency broadcaster, ABC Radio.
On your radio, online, and on the ABC Listen app, this is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
Now, the focus is shifting to rainfall in the far north coast, and it's already caused a bit of a landslip on the Kennedy Highway on the Atherton Tablelands over the weekend. It was on Lucy Stocker's coffee farm in Malanda, and she spoke with Sophie Johnson about what happened.
We're located right at the top of the Atherton Tablelands in a really hilly area, and the Kennedy Highway sort of cuts through the hills near us, and after 80 mils of rain on Saturday afternoon, pretty intense, it all came down within about half an hour. We had a landslide take off the edge of the paddock right up to the edge of the Kennedy Highway. It was into our cattle paddock, not into the coffee, but it was just from all the rain coming down the road and from the hill behind, I guess. Somehow managed to undercut the footings of the highway and take it away.
And so what's going on with the highway now?
Yeah, there's crews been on it since 8:30 last night. They're just putting in some temporary fixes now, putting in some sandbags and that to redirect the water, putting on some black plastic to stop more water ending up on the slope, and lots of flashing lights and one-way traffic while they work out what to do for a long-term fix.
Yeah, and so how quickly were people able to respond to that situation on the highway?
Oh, I took a couple of calls to Main Roads and a few other people. I called as soon as I saw it on Saturday afternoon, and they got crews onto it on Sunday night. I was just assuming they had, you know, lots of work on in the state, because there's been a ton of bad weather everywhere. But, I was just really concerned about the trucks. You know, we get a lot of B-doubles on this part of the highway heading out west. And, the road had got cut right back to the side, that if a truck went too close to the edge, it might end up in the bottom of our paddock. So, we gave them a little bit more of a nudge yesterday, and they came good last night.
Yeah, so were there any incidents?
No, there was no incidents. There was, I think that the traffic has been pretty quiet, as I said. We're happy about that, and just happy to see lots of action today to try and put in some temporary fixes.
For sure, and you also had your open day scheduled over the weekend. Did that still go ahead despite landslips and rainfall totals?
Yeah, we love our farm open days, our Crater Mountain Coffee Farm open days. They're on the first Sunday of every month, and it takes a bit for me to cancel them these days. The January one is always a banger, and we had a brilliant day yesterday. Loads of lovely people coming to visit the farm and talk coffee, and one of my friends even bought his keyboard and played a bit of jazz. So we had shed jazz and coffee in the drizzle. It was beautiful.
Oh, lovely. So nothing stops the open day.
not much. But we don't want to push our luck too much. There's a bit more of the wet season to get through yet.
That's the truth. Lucy Stocker from Crater Mountain Coffee in Malanda speaking with Sophie Johnson. It's 27 past 12. Well, let's check in on that. Well, I guess the next few days of the wet season to get through. Baden Gilbert is the forecaster on duty at the Weather Bureau. Baden, is the situation starting to ease in the northwest?
Yeah, so we're still watching a variety of flood warnings out about northwest Queensland, as you would have said a couple of minutes ago, with the key ones being the Flinders River and the Western River just upstream of the Diamantina. Particularly places like Richmond and Winton are the focus at the moment, where some of those waters are flowing, as well as up towards some of the Gulf Coast around Normanton in the Norman catchment too. So definitely a lot of water still on the ground, and we've actually seen for the first time since this event unfolded, actually some pretty clear skies across northwest Queensland, which is good news in terms of not getting any more rainfall to top up some of that water on the ground, but also just a chance for us to be able to see on satellite exactly how extensive some of this water over the land is. And in, yeah, some parts you can see on the satellite that it's, you know, 10, 20 kilometres across, which is quite extraordinary when you think about it.
Yeah, and, you know, it is that difficult time of waiting to get access and work out what's actually going on there. But is it a case that the real focus now shifts to the North Queensland coast as the rain kind of builds up there?
Yeah, we're definitely still watching a variety of areas across northern Queensland, and we still do have a flood watch current for places like the Burdekin River and the Horton River up towards the Daintree, as well as some of those catchments like the Herbert still in warning at the moment. As we go through to the end of the week, we're really starting to see the focus of that rainfall shift back towards the northeast tropical coast as the monsoon trough reforms and we have a tropical low beginning to form in the Coral Sea.
And talking about that tropical low, is it still the case that the chance of it developing into a cyclone is sort of moderate around the weekend?
Indeed, yes. Yeah. So we've done a reassessment this morning, as we do every day, of these systems, and the system in the Coral Sea The combination of that monsoonal flow as well as some pretty fresh winds on the south side are going to really help to develop a low off in the Coral Sea, roughly to the east of Cooktown initially. But as we go into the back end of the week and the weekend, where all the guidance is indicating that that feature would move back towards the Queensland coast and potentially be either, if not at tropical cyclone strength, then still definitely a significant rain-bearing system as we go into the weekend. So even if there isn't a cyclone warning current and we get to the weekend, there's still definitely potential for some pretty significant rainfall, particularly about the northeast tropical coast. But once that system moves on shore, there's still a variety of scenarios in play as we go through the back of the weekend into early next week.
So who's the difference between it remaining as a tropical low and becoming, say, a Cat 1 cyclone, the wind speed?
Indeed, yeah. The wind is the reason that it gets the name of a cyclone or a low. And we, if we see gales more than halfway around that system, that is our threshold to be able to declare a tropical cyclone. But even if there's not a tropical cyclone declared and it's just a tropical low, it can still be a significant rain-bearing system. There's definitely examples in Queensland history of systems that don't necessarily have a lot of wind but do have quite a bit of rainfall.
You don't have to tell someone who lives in Bundaberg that.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah, like, so really encouraging people in North Queensland to stay up to date with the forecast as we go into this weekend and any warnings if and when they're issued.
When are we likely to get a sense of where it might impact? Is that toward the end of the week?
Yeah, so it really depends exactly where it forms and exactly how the steering mechanisms grab it as we go into the next couple of days. We'll start to pin down where that system could cross the coast, but definitely northern Queensland broadly should be aware of this system, not only before the winds around the centre, but the rain could also extend quite away from the centre, particularly on the southern flank of that system, looking at the modelling that we've got so far. And once it reaches land, there's some guidance that continues to move it westwards and takes it towards the Gulf of Carpentaria, while some other guidance potentially even moves it further southwards through towards the central coast and even, you know, some of that rainfall reaching the Capricornia as we get into early next week. So a variety of scenarios in play, and we're even assessing whether we need to consider a second risk of a tropical low in the Gulf of Carpentaria, separate to this other one in the Coral Sea. So it is one of those more active periods we're returning into. Even though today and tomorrow looking like a relative lull compared to what we've seen in the past couple of weeks, that risk really does begin to pick up about the North Tropical Coast from Thursday and then continue into the weekend.
And looking more broadly at the rest of the state, how are conditions in central and southern parts?
More normal is in a word. We've been sitting pretty near average in temperatures. We do have a slight risk of some thunderstorms about parts of the southeast of the state for today, extending up into the Wide Bay Burnett and the Central Highlands, as well as the Darling Downs. Probably not as extensive as yesterday when we did see a bunch of areas get 20, 30 millimetres from storms about the eastern Darling Downs, some of that falling in under an hour. So some short and sharp storms were about, but looking a bit less likely than yesterday for today, and then just coastal showers for the rest of the week after that.
And what about the southern coasts? How far down are we likely to see the impact of the low in the north?
It really depends how the system evolves. Like, some modelling is really just keeping it in northern Queensland, and some modelling essentially like creates a band of rain that makes its way southwards through Mackay, through even to Rockhampton, and even reaching the Wide Bay Burnett by the time you get to Monday, Tuesday next week. But there's a lot of uncertainty around that, so we will be watching every single model run we get and reassessing exactly what those forecasts need to do. But for now, the focus is really going to be around northern Queensland as we go into this weekend. And once we get a bit more certainty in exactly how the system is shaping up, we will then be able to give more detail about where it's going to go next.
Fair enough. And how about temperatures? How are things looking? I know there are other parts of the country that are looking at some very hot temperatures at the moment. What about Queensland?
For Queensland, thankfully, less to talk about in the temperature space. It has been a pretty cool few weeks under all the cloud and rain that we've had in North Queensland, but temperatures have largely been bouncing back to normal from today, particularly about the northwestern interior. Temperatures are a little bit above average further south about the southern interior. Some of the heatwave activity that's going on in New South Wales and South Australia might just brush parts of the Channel Country as we get into the back end of this week, but no huge temperature anomalies really. Maybe just a bit of a peak about the southern interior and southeast on Sunday, but other than that, temperatures are broadly sitting near average, unless you're going to be under a lot of rainfall, in which case it might be a bit lower than average.
Thank heavens for small mercies. Baden, thank you very much for the update.
You too. Have a good one.
Baden Gilbert is the forecaster on duty for you at the Weather Bureau today. And you can, of course, get the latest weather information online at bom.gov.au. And keep listening to ABC Radio, your emergency broadcaster, where we'll keep you up to date with all the warnings and changes in the weather situation. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour. It's 25 to 1. And you can send me a message on 0487 993 222. G'day to Mark at Tweed. Mark sent a message to say something no one's commented on regarding the Queensland floods is, will the flooding destroy much of the wild pig numbers in the inundated region, considering how short they are compared to cattle? Or are they more able to survive flooding than cattle? Interesting to know. Mark, that is an interesting question, and I don't have an answer for you, but I'll endeavour to see if we can find one. I do know that when it comes to things like rats and mice, that flooding and cooler temperatures can be very helpful in controlling those kinds of plagues. But when it comes to the pigs, I'm not so sure. My gut instinct says probably, but I'm not 100% sure. I'll see what I can find out for you, Mark. If you've got an answer, 0487 993 222. If you've experienced it in the past and can provide some insight, I'd love to hear from you.
This is the Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on ABC Radio Queensland.
A little later in the program, we're going to take a quick trip overseas to one of our most significant export partners and have a look at what some of the young people there think about a future in agriculture. We'll do that before 1 o'clock. Right now, though, we are obviously talking a lot about impact of flooding and heavy rain and road closures in the far north, but particularly dealing with unsealed roads in this kind of weather is challenging across the state. And there's research underway to tackle particularly sediment runoff from unsealed roads in state forestry and on dairy farms that could potentially end up in southeast Queensland's Mary River. Jennifer Nichols asked HQ Plantation Stewardship Forester Kath Nash about this pilot project, which should help reduce the amount of soil and nutrients that washes out to the southern Great Barrier Reef.
HQ Plantations are very happy to be working in partnership with the MRCCC. Obviously, through a lot of our areas, we have unsealed roads. So one of the big things that has been identified by people studying the catchment, like Peter Hairsine and people from the Australian National University, is that it's fine sediment that's getting in through to the Great Barrier Reef. And as it turns out, unsealed roads is one of these sources for the fine sediment.
Well, it's not surprising. I took a trip up from Kenilworth to Jimna through the forest on the gravel track, and the amount of fine sediment that came back on our vehicle was big enough, let alone what's potentially washing down in the waterways.
Yes, you know, obviously we welcome recreational people coming into our areas, but we really need people to take a little bit more care and a little bit more pride in the areas they use, sticking to the main formed roads. A lot of these areas we use for our harvesting operations and their haulage roads, and also largely a lot of these roads are our fire breaks. So if we have four-wheel drivers using them or motorbikes using them, they end up turning into pretty much a sediment corridor, like a little erosion corridor, and of course that makes it difficult for us to access these areas when we need to, when there's fires.
So what can you do to remedy that? Because part of the contract with HQ Plantations and the government is that public access is still allowed. I have seen some areas where, you know, it's been fenced off to allow repair work to go underway, and also when logging is underway for safety reasons, obviously.
We've got an awareness campaign out at the moment, and it's basically, we don't ride into your work areas. Please, if we've got gates and road closed signs up, then please respect that. You know, these roads are closed for a reason. We just need people to be respectful and not trying to show off on these roads. Obviously, they all need to follow the standard road rules, and if the road is closed, it's closed for a reason.
when you're talking about tackling the sediment on the roads, so you've got awareness campaigns going, what else can you do? Because you're not going to be able to seal these roads.
We're starting a project with the MRCCC, and so basically the idea is to set up a demonstration site to clearly identify how we can separate the road system from the creek system. There's various different techniques that we can use, different sort of woe boys added in.
Sorry?
Woe boys. Or
it's a woe boy.
They're diversion bars that get put across the road, like a built-up soil bank, so it diverts the water off the road. And also things like stabilising areas with gravel and rock. And what else do we do? Put in culverts.
Kath Nash from HQ Plantations. We're swapping over to the Mary River Catchment Coordinating Committee's representative on this unsealed road project. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yes, I'm Tom Brook with the MRCCC. As Kath said, there's a lot of sediment derived from these unsealed roads. So we're looking at implementing some water-sensitive designs, and it's about trying to separate as much as we can the water that runs down the road so it doesn't end up in the creek and have it filtered out before it reaches the creek. So with this one, we've partnered with Peter Hessein at Australian National University, and he's in 30-plus years of experience in sediment research, a lot in forestry landscapes. The idea is to fix one creek crossing in HQP to act as a demonstration site, and we're going to host workshops to try and change the contractors' approaches and just awareness around the sensitivity of the water issue and sediment in the waterway.
The trial crossing, where's it situated?
So it'll be close to Kenilworth, in the forestry there. The second part of this project also is working with a local dairy farmer community, and we're going to also do a similar approach to a dairy laneway crossing to showcase to graziers and dairy farmers water-sensitive designs. Yeah.
That's critical too, because you don't want nutrients from animals going into the waterway when those nutrients, e.g. manure, are much better off being used on the land.
Yes, that's right. It's about getting the drain spacings correct so the nutrients are used better in the landscape rather than ending up in the waterway. And dairy laneways are just as trafficked as some of the roads that HQP manage, but for different reasons. So when you've got 200 or 300 dairy cars crossing each day, twice a day, HQP have tens of four-wheel drives, and on the weekend hundreds of four-wheel drives using these crossings and causing big problems.
You did give a statistic in there of just how much sediment you think might be coming off these dairy laneways?
In a dairy system, it could be up to about 10%, or if not more, depending on the farm. There is a bit of research in this space, but
more needs to be done.
That's right. Yeah.
It's exciting to be able to be involved in a project like this.
Yeah, it's kind of in a way taking a new approach. There's been other roads projects elsewhere, but never to this extent in the Mary, and particularly not with forestry and dairy locally. So it's quite a new and exciting project to be part of.
Tom Brook, a catchment officer with the Mary River Catchment Coordinating Committee, ending that report from Jennifer Nichols. It is 18 minutes to 12. You can send me a message on 0487993222. Up next on the Country Hour, one beef exporter's take on the introduction of tariffs from China. And after that, a quick trip overseas to check in on the young people in the ag industry in one of our most significant export partners.
Get more from your garden all year with a subscription to our magazines. Gardening Australia delivers expert advice for each season, and in Organic Gardener, Live Green and Eat Well. Subscribe now at abcmagazines.com.au.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour with Callie Buchanan on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
We're just over 5 days into China's 55% tariff on beef imports after claims by farmers in that country that they were hurting their profitability. Now, one Australian Angus beef exporter is concerned that it will have a detrimental effect on the industry. Robert McKenzie is concerned for smaller producers in particular, like himself, and he's calling for a quota system to manage the 205,000 tonnes that Australia has been given. He exports a container load with 26 tonnes of premium cuts to China per month, and there's a shipment due to leave this week. He's speaking here to Kim Honan.
We're only sending a container every month, so they're only a small
percentage of our monthly production, but they're still a very important part of our supply chain. Very important. We send a certain amount of cuts there that just help us navigate where all of that production of that animal goes, and they take some cuts that aren't as sought after in other markets. So they're definitely an important part of our program.
So what sort of cuts do you send?
Oh, look, we'll send shin shank and tri-tips and just certain cuts that aren't as popular in other markets.
And so what sort of impact do you think this tariff will have on your business?
I think it'll have a big impact on Australian agriculture. I'm worried that a lot of the big processors will flood the market into China with trims, offals and bones, which that will go towards making up that 205,000 metric ton. That quota could be filled come June, July 2026. And if we're moving regular product into our customers in China come, you know, June or July this year, they're not going to be able to absorb that tariff. So we'll then have to reallocate that product into some other markets. Naturally, when we reach out to those other potential customers, they'll know that the tariff has taken effect on Australian product, and you know, they'll play a little bit hardball. So we've really got to look at it now. You know, do we look for those other markets beforehand? Or do we wait till the tariff comes into play mid-year? What do we do?
And so if the quota's filled with the cheaper trim, lower-end products, then the Chinese consumer misses out on the Australian premium product. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, as soon as that quota's filled, and whether it's, trim, bones, offals or high-end product, whenever that's filled, the consumer's going to miss out on that product. We have to then work out where that product's going to go in other parts of the world. And look, Australian beef is definitely high up on the menu right around the world. So potentially it might not be hard to move that, but it definitely will come at a cost. There's no doubt about it.
As an exporter, would you try and pass that 55% tariff onto the Chinese consumer? Would they pay that? Is that a consideration?
No, they wouldn't pay it. The Chinese market's very price sensitive now, and they wouldn't be able to absorb that. So there'll be no way that you'd be selling any product into China once that tariff comes into play. So it'll be a little bit of a mess. My thoughts are whether the government and our peak bodies, MLA, Cattle Australia, etc., get together, and whether we look at maybe a quota system. So if you're selling product into China in 2024 and it was X amount of kilos or tonnages, you might be allowed to have that quota for 2026, and then it won't be such a rush to the door. It's just going to be a rush for people to pump that product into China. It'll just go into cold stores, be frozen, and they'll just use it throughout the year. But it's just going to really make us or smaller producers like ourselves manage that supply chain. And also that void when they say, look, we can't take any more. So it's a big decision that we have to make. We're not a big player. We're only a small player, but that market's very important to us.
So if you do keep exporting to China until June when the quota's filled, where do you think you may export to then? What other markets would you might consider?
Well, look, we're sending product into Hong Kong. So it might be Korea. It might be Vietnam. Obviously, it'll be probably for those cuts. It'll be into that Asian market most likely. But then we also got the problem too is, you know, Brazil and Argentina and all that. When they hit their quota, they'll be looking to flood the market also. Anyway, we'll just have to wait and see. But it is a little bit concerning. It concerns me on how we're going to manage it, how the industry will manage it. And we've worked really hard to build, you know, solid supply chains in China. working with some really, really good people, and they would be scrambling also thinking, well, how are they going to manage come the back end of 2026 also?
Well, we know this is about, you know, protecting local producers in China. Do you know if the industries there are growing their Angus and Wagyu herds?
Yeah, look, that is a really good question. We have been in discussions with some companies in China about sending some of our genetics into China to, you know, help, I suppose, boost the quality of their herd, and whether that's with fertility, with weight gain, but also feed conversion. We're very focused on that within our own operation. So the China farmers or the Chinese agriculture department, they definitely want to make their farmers more profitable and more productive, and we've been in discussions with them about sending genetics into China to help make their herd more productive.
A potential loss to you.
Oh, look, whether they do this or not, it's the tariffs, they're going to come in anyway. So maybe if we can boost up the quality of their herd, they might drop this tariff down the track anyway, because the problem is, you know, a lot of their product isn't meeting that high-end market, and they probably want to make that product meet that market. So, look, if one door closed, another one might open. You never know. But, look, at the end of the day, I think that we can manage this fallout if we get the support from our government and our industry.
It's a delicate balance. That's Robert McKenzie. He's the director of Macca's Australian Black Angus Beef in New South Wales, Hunter Valley, and he was speaking to Kim Honan. Do you share his concerns? Send me a message on 0487 993 222. Up next, we're going to take a quick trip overseas and check in on how the kids are doing in one of our most significant export partner countries.
Quiz show's too easy for you. Not hard quiz, unless you're an expert in, say, sewage or vintage sewing machines. Everyone's good at something.
Join Tom Gleeson for the brand new season of Hard Quiz.
Hard!
Wednesday, January 7 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour with Kelly Buchanan on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Now, it's a common complaint in the ag industry in Australia that there's just not enough young people interested in joining the sector. But on a trip to Indonesia, one of our most significant export partners, Emma Field discovered there are many young people interested in studying agriculture and being a part of that country's future industry.
I'm at a university campus at Kalitoto village in the Yogyakarta district of Indonesia. I'm at the Agrotechnology Innovation Centre of UGM, a local university with lots of research and trial plots, plus greenhouses, and plenty of ag science students.
Hello, my name is Ziza. I'm a master's student in phytopathology, UGM.
Cool. Why did you choose to study agriculture?
Actually, because my father is a farmer. And then when in my society, always ask me why this plant, what the disease. So
what is the disease in the plant?
Yes, yeah. Actually. So from that, interesting for studying this.
Yeah, wow. And so what crops or do they grow on your farm, your father's farm?
Actually, vegetable and rice.
Rice?
Yes, actually, rice.
What do you find exciting in your studies?
Because the challenging is climate change. So I think not only climate change, but plant and disease come to more resistant. So I think we must learn new things for a solution for this problem.
Okay, hello, my name is Uci Nugroho. I'm from Klaten, Central Java, and I master student in phytopathology, UGM.
Okay. Why did you choose to study agriculture or choose to study the path that you are on?
Okay, I'm studying master in phytopathology because I'm interested in in science,
in the science.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because I'm from village.
Village.
Yes.
Yeah. And so was your family involved in farming?
Yes. Karena saya tinggal di desa, jadi memang ada keluarga yang sebagai petani gitu.
Yes, correct. So his family lives in the village, and so some of his family members are farmers.
Okay, karena saya tinggalnya di desa ya, Mbak, gitu. Jadi memang
the people in the village are heavily reliant on rice. So yes, food production is very important for people, especially those who live in the village.
And what is your favorite part about your studies? What do you enjoy?
Terus kemudian pertanian itu kan juga penting bagi kita, terutama bagi petani ya, karena pertanian itu yang dibutuhkan.
Agriculture is very important, especially for farmers.
Ya, karena itu yang selalu diaplikasikan lebih praktis, lebih mudah gitu loh.
Because that's what is always applied and it's more practical for them.
Dan itu
have links to technology, for example, at climate change, as what my colleague mentioned.
Yeah.
So technology helps farmers in applying all of these solutions, for example, the use of drone.
At the same campus, I meet some Japanese ag students who were there visiting the Indonesian university.
My name is Rena Sugi. My major is forestry, mainly like tree physiology.
My name is Azumi Kawai. My major is plant microbiology and especially study on Pongamia.
Yeah.
My name is Kosuke Jonouchi. I'm majoring plant microbiome too, especially in rice root surface microbiome.
Yeah. And so tell me, why did you choose to study agriculture?
Actually, my hometown, grandfather and grandmother is farmer. So I want to study agriculture.
And what does your grandmother grow?
So many crops, so I difficult to explain, but mainly tomato and rice.
Interesting. And what about you? Why did you study agriculture?
Because there are two reasons. One is I love to eat, and so agriculture is really essential for humans, so I'm interested in. And also, I'm interested in the global warming, and I want to do something, a solution
to help with global warming.
Yeah.
And what about you? Why do you study agriculture?
I think because agriculture is connected with almost all the field of science, because it can be connected with biology, physics, and geology, or like chemistry. Yeah. So, you know, when there's some problems that can be solved by the science, agriculture can be a tackle on it for every field. So if I study this, maybe I can, you know, I can see it. Think the problem more widely view, so that's why I choose this work.
And we're here in Indonesia at a university farm. What have you learnt so far?
The species are completely different from Japanese species, like the tropical trees, tropical plants. But you know, my family name is actually meaning is Japanese cedarwood, but there's no Japanese cedarwood here.
But it turns out not everyone aspires to work in agriculture. When I travelled to Bogor, I met the son of a dairy farming couple who also value-add and make yogurt drinks on their farm.
My name is Noval. I live in Tanjung Halang.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a president.
A president? Well, I wish you good luck with that. And when you become president, I'm going to come back and visit you in the palace.
And I will give you a free yogurt.
Keep aiming high. 11-year-old Nova from the Bogor region of Indonesia, ending that report from Emma Field. And Emma travelled to Indonesia as part of the Crawford Fund Journalism Scholarship with support from DFAT and the ASEAN Australian Centre. That's about it for the Queensland Country Hour today. I will just very quickly run you through the latest flood summaries before I let you go. So just be aware that there is a local Watch and Act warning continuing for the Richmond, Winton and Flinders Shires.
Residents there should monitor conditions as flooding continues in these regions over coming days. There are also multiple flood warnings current, including major flood warnings for the Western River, where the river at Winton is falling with moderate flooding, but renewed rises and a major level are still possible there. For the Flinders River, with major flooding continuing at Richmond and Walker's Bend, the latest reading at Walker's Bend was 16.2 metres and steady. There's also a moderate flood warning for the Herbert, Norman and Georgina rivers, as well as minor and general flood warnings covering several other river systems. And a broad flood watch continues for the northeast Queensland coast, with heavy rain expected to develop between Cairns and Proserpine in coming days. Of course, you'll get the latest weather information always on ABC Radio. In the meantime, you can head along to the website abc.net.au/emergency, or you can head to get the latest in rural news at abc.net.au/rural. The Country Hour will be back on your radio during the lunch break in cricket tomorrow and right here on the digital stream from midday as always. My name is Callie Buchanan. It's been a pleasure to spend this afternoon with you. I hope to chat to you again very soon. It's 1 o'clock.